All right, this hour, we'll call it Conversations with Linda. We'll take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Linda Moulton Howe with us, of course. Linda, this May 5th announcement with these pictures, these slides, what do you think of that story?
Well, they're two 1947 vintage color, but I guess Jaime is hoping that if he can present this in Mexico City, they're even doing this 3D holographic projection. Mm-hmm. But from just talking with Jaime, it's so clear that it's very difficult to tell a tremendous amount from the slides in this regard, that it appears that they were post autopsy and that there is some sort of a towel or portion of a blanket or something is around the neck area. That means that a part of the crucial part of how does the head hook onto the body is obscured, right? And the pinkish gray color of the body, it's not determined whether that is because of the age, if that's the fresh. There's so many unknowns, and we're not even precisely sure who took the photo and not precisely where. There are a lot of unknowns, but given all of that, and that the whole event, I think, is being criticized probably unduly in this regard, the two slides are opening up a dialogue about the fact that they exist in that whole historic context that I reported about on Coast with Jaime back in February, mm-hmm. having to do with the woman married to the oil man, and that she may have been working for intelligence. That's probably likely. And that that is how and why she would have had access to or been involved with something that related to the autopsies or where the extraterrestrial biological entities were investigated. The problem is everybody wants a chain of what's called a chain of custody of who took the photo, on what date, what time, where, what facility, what camera, under whose direction. Those are the parts that everybody would like filled in. So even though it may be an incomplete piece of the history, it's going to be very interesting to see. One of the problems also, Jaime told me that in the interview that I had on Coast in February, they really don't have any idea what the eyes were like. One of the eyes was completely missing. It had apparently been taken out, maybe in the autopsy or who knows. And the other eye in the photograph is not open or barely. So that means that it is pure interpretation of what the eyes were. Now, the most positive thing is that everyone who has looked at the slides says that it really does seem, and this is a word that has been used, childlike mm-hmm. in proportions. I remember back in the early 80s sitting in Frank Kaufman's house in Roswell with his wife, with him showing me his Roswell Army Airfield papers, all sorts of things about his work in the military, his telling me that he was in a security group that did go to one of the crash sites, and that the bodies reminded him they were childlike. And in his house on that day that he and his wife had asked me to come and look at his historic papers, he brought out an oil painting that he had done of these childlike beings. And I will never forget this, because these are the moments when you're, especially if you're a reporter, when you know you're in the presence of people who have true pent-up emotion. When he sat down to show me this oil painting that he had done from his memory, he started to tear up. And he had a hard time talking. And when he did begin to talk, it was, as many people that I've interviewed who have had interactions with the non-humans. I'm not saying necessarily Roswell. I'm just saying that the interaction between humans and non-humans, there are telepathic downloads that occur that can leave humans with a tremendous range of emotions about these beings. Something went into Frank Kaufman. I personally have no doubt. I know that he and others have been attacked by people throughout the decades, and he's passed, but I had a personal interaction with him, his wife, saw what happened in the oil painting, looked at all of his papers, and I think that Frank Kaufman was telling a truth.
He was one of the first on the scene, wasn't he?
That's what he always said.
Yeah.
And the question is, these guys were sworn up and down in every which way. You don't ever tell anybody about it. But over time, they did. Well, so what do people do who have been sworn with all kinds of and threatened with punishment? Instead of saying, this is the road that I went on with these guys, they say, maybe it was that road. In other words, I've seen this so many times, you get used to the fact that people are trying often to tell a truth, but they have been threatened or warned, and so you will have deflections in and around, and once anybody deflects, that's why people get attacked. The deflection may be defensive, it may be in an effort to survive politically or protect a family, but once you see deflection from truth, unfortunately, that's often when the baby is thrown out with the bathwater. I have tried not to do that in my professional life all the time. In other words, I listened to Frank Kaufman. I saw and felt something between him, his wife, looking at all those papers. There's no question in my personal mind that Frank Kaufman was involved in one of those retrieval operations. But George, when you look at the amount of documents that Bob and Ryan Wood have assembled over the years, and a lot of it coming from that one huge cache of papers that they got in the mid-90s, and you realize that the truth, quote-unquote, in these documents and in people's experiences becomes something that people, to survive, they are making things up around the edges. And that's the problem, I think, that there were multiple in the Majestic 12 White Hot document. It talks about three landing zones between July 2nd and July 5th. That's what they were called. Landing zones, LZ1, LZ2, and LZ3. Landing zone one, if I'm remembering correctly, was between Corona and Roswell. Landing zone two, if I'm remembering correctly, was in the Trinity site area where we did the atomic bomb explosion in 1945 in the property of White Sands. The third, I remember, I think, quite clearly, was 30 miles east of Alamogordo, and it was on the Mescalero Indian Reservation. And those three are listed in detail. They are named as such and described in those documents. Well, three. Frank Kaufman may or may not have been to the one between Corona and Roswell, but that is the only one that ever made it public because of the mistake by Colonel Blanchard and the press release that then Ramey comes in with the weather balloon explanation trying to stop the leak. So you can see that there were men going out in three different areas within July 2nd and July 5th of 1947, and every single one of those men in three different sites would have been told and threatened, and you don't ever talk about this. And if Frank finally did and was always a little cagey about exactly where, that might be the explanation.
All right, let's go to the phones now for you, Linda. We'll go to Kevin in Philadelphia, California, I believe. Is that where you are, Kevin?
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
Sir.
How did we get a CA up there? Okay.
Hey, Linda, aren't you from Philadelphia here?
I lived there for 13 years, and I love that city.
Yeah. Hey, Linda, New Age stuff, I never talked to you before, all this New Age stuff, all this UFO, this is all demonic, New Age, Luciferian stuff. The aliens are Nephilim, fallen angels.
Wait, hold on.
The only way to God is through Jesus Christ.
You're on the radio, so say, my opinion is, because this is not a fact.
It's proven that the name of Jesus Christ stops alien abductions. aliens are demons, okay?
Well, a lot of people think that. A lot of people think they're demons.
I'm saying that's not a fact.
Oh, no, of course not.
So it's an opinion.
Jacques Vallée, what do you think he thinks of them? Dimensional?
I've known Jacques for a very long time, and we've had very, very profound discussions about other dimensions and how all of this might work, and when you go back to his first Anatomy of a Phenomena and Passport to Magonia, those were extremely important and intelligent books, because what Jacques was sensing early on back in the 60s, 60s to 70s, was a control system. And he and John Keel were probably two of the first to start presenting the idea that whatever it is, whatever is behind the manipulation of our Earth and its history and the genetic evolution, it is a control system. You can put a capital C and a capital S. The control system stays behind the Matrix. I think that's why that first movie really resonated with a lot of people, because you may not know all the details, but I think humans by instinct know this planet is quite peculiar, and that everybody senses that there is always something going on behind the surface, and that's why the Matrix word makes sense. And in that whole effort to look at this as a control system, Jacques and Jean Keel came at it from different points of view, but their bottom line was something that another friend of mine, Robert Girard, who ran Arcturus Books for years before he died, had written a beautiful little book comparing Earth humans to sheep in the pasture. They're well-fed, they're taken care of, they get water, they get food most of the time. They are comfortable and kept comfortable in many ways. But then there comes shearings, and then there come other kinds of traumatic events, and the sheep are used. And that the comparison in the control system is that humans, the evolving primate, is being manipulated, programmed, and used. The issue is, can we keep going as a species, not killing ourselves, get past that destructive crossroads that we're in now, and get on to another side where we could finally meet and maybe begin to understand in a much more intelligent way what is behind the control system that may not be just focused on Earth, maybe focused on the solar system, the galaxy, the universe, and now we're back to what I was quoting from David Bohm, the idea of a cosmos that has multiple dimensions enfolded in it, and the key is how to unfold and begin to interact with those other dimensions.
It is remarkable, Linda, how so many different people are coming up with their own certain views about what it may be and what they may be. I think David Jacobs may be spot on. I think there's something very, very evil going on with them.
I myself think it's much more complex than that. I don't think you might have something that wasn't interested in humans, and I certainly have been reporting at earthfiles.com a series that I'm bringing up again because I think it's so important. I've been doing a lot of thinking about that I call the writers that I had interactions with back in the early 1990s through my friend Ray Boucher. And the writers presented themselves to Ray, one with a DIA badge, as I recall, and another one with NSA. And they wanted to read my book, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 1. I was working on it, and it came out in 94. And the fact that these men working in government intel and operating on other intelligences wanted to see my book was quite fascinating. And we had a dialogue about many things, and they definitely said that there is an aspect of this that is not benevolent towards humans. But that comes up in the Ronald Reagan briefing at Camp David. That allegedly by Colby, the CIA director, told Ronald Reagan that they knew that we were dealing with five different types of extraterrestrial biological entities. This is to Ronald Reagan, March 6 to 8, 1981, Camp David. If this transcript is all true, and many people have various aspects of vetting think it is. And that, when they broke down the five different extraterrestrial biological entities, one, they put in the category of being a hostile alien visitor. But what is really intriguing is that of the other four, one would be in the category of a prime intelligence in, we'll call it the gray type, that made the next two on the list. They are described. The second one is made by rapid cycle cloning. Those words are used in the briefing for Reagan. That means that one extraterrestrial group is using rapid cycle cloning to make yet another species of itself. They define a third group as being a hybridization. It's a hybridized group by the first one. So now you've got three on that list of five that are all interbred is not the right word. It's cloning and hybridization within, we'll call it this particular civilization that come to us as three different types, and they're actually interrelated. Well, then the fourth probably is the tall pales, and the fifth, the hostile alien visitor, the HAVs, as it's described to Reagan, these are nasty insects that can camouflage themselves as blonde humans.
We're coming back with calls, final calls, with Linda Moulton Howe next. Well, my intensive travel schedule in May continues. I've got an affiliate event this coming weekend in Santa Cruz, California. So come on out, check in with the affiliate, KSCO, there. If you want, David Schrader will fill in for me tomorrow while I travel around. But I'll be back on Sunday with emerging artists and a couple great guests. And welcome back to Coast, Linda Moulton Howe with us. Linda, let's go to these final calls as they line up for you. Jay is truck driving in Kansas. Jay, welcome to the show. You're up with us.
Hi, how are you?
Good, Jay. Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
First-time caller, long-time listener. Appreciate you taking my call.
Sure thing.
I was just wondering, I've been listening since the Art Bell days, and I love the Linda Moulton Howe segments.
Thank you.
I was a military police officer back in the late 80s, early 90s on Fort Riley and had the opportunity to get promoted and was in charge of their SRT, which is kind of like a SWAT team. And we got information as far as what were priority targets on the fort that had a level one priority response. And one of the ones that was on an old MS-DOS computer, and it had layouts of the buildings, and one of the buildings was called the UFO Holding Center on Marshall Army Air Base. And I was just wondering if you've ever heard of any of those. While I was on patrol one night, I went out, and there's huge cuts in the airbase where you can actually, where it looks like it could fold the airbase, the backside of the airbase open. And I've never heard of that since. The next time we went back through the computer system, that was removed. I think that was a mistake that we weren't supposed to see. But there's only about 9 guys that ever saw that, and several of them have since passed on through different kind of combat things, and I was just wondering if that was something you'd ever heard of.
I sure would like to follow up with you more. Could you email me at earthfiles@earthfiles.com and put in the subject line, Marshall UFO Holding Center?
We will do that.
And then I could follow up with you by phone, hopefully.
You get a lot of leads this way, Linda, don't you?
Yeah, it's very helpful, and so are conferences. And one of the things that I hope that you and I could talk about just briefly is Contact in the Desert. You're going to be there the 29th, 30th, 31 at some point, and I'm going to be there from the 28th to the 1st of June. They've got me doing a lot of things, and I'm going to do a lecture on the mysterious booms and the metallic scraping and the trumpet sounds that are not only in North America but are in Europe. And I'm doing a workshop on whatever is the latest that I can bring to bear on the Earth's magnetic poles flip this century. There's an awful lot that's quite fascinating. And then a 3-hour intensive on Monday, June 1st, I'm doing on Bentwaters, more revelations and panels. So I hope I'm going to see you in travels in contact
yes,
as sure well.
You sure will. I look forward to it. I go out there every year. And I've got to tell you, at night in the desert, looking at the sky, those stars, yeah. Linda, unbelievable.
Yeah, they do look like they go on forever in the trillions.
They sure do. Okay, let's go now to Joplin, Missouri. Brett's turn on Coast to Coast. Brett, you're on with Linda. Go ahead.
Good evening, Master Nori.
Hello, Brett.
Wanted to say, Ms. Moulton Howe, you are my favorite guest on Coast to Coast.
Thank you.
I very sadly, I'm disabled, and I got sick and missed you at Eureka Springs.
Oh.
I live just 2 hours away. It's a beautiful city. George, please come next year to Eureka Springs.
I shall.
I'm going to make sure I get there next year. Come HEL 66 and high water. And Ms. Howe, I wanted to ask you, I respect you, and it's a great honor to speak with you. And I wanted to ask, in your heart of hearts, do you believe in God and Jesus, and that our souls will be saved and go on to heaven?
Yes, I
That's
do.
My question.
I think that we have an ally in the divine field. And I think the avatars of history that include Jesus Christ are part of the machinery of the benevolent divine field. And that there may be choices throughout the cosmos about whether souls go toward light or something that's darker. But in the end, in the big scheme of things, I really think that everything is ultimately working toward some sort of a resolution in the divine field itself, in which all souls will eventually choose the light back to the divine field. And I think that is the large context within which Jesus Christ and the avatars of history have tried to teach us.
Linda, I haven't had a chance to talk to you about a report that came out a few months ago that the universe may not have had a Big Bang, but that it was always there.
Yeah, this is exactly relevant to that David Bohm excerpt about the idea when I said, since I first heard that sentence about the Alpha to the Omega, that all that has ever been and can ever be is already there. And I used to sit and try to grasp and comprehend that. And the David Bohm winding the glycerin with dropping the ink into it until it disappears, but it's never disappeared. It is an unfolding, and then there is a process of unfolding, and that the ink will come back exactly as it was, but you have to have a dynamic that is interacting with that glycerin that is winding and unwinding, and that there is something about that metaphor and the idea of a cosmos in which all of it, from the beginning to the end, that there really is not an end, that it is all that ever will be, but we're not experiencing it all at one time. We couldn't. No life form could handle it. And that there is something about the process of going in and out of body containers, and some people even having memories of other lives, and the near-death experiences, and the idea that we go on with consciousness of the soul after the moment of death, and that there is a constant recycling and evolution forward, and that the enfolding that David Bohm tried to use that metaphor is the revealing, in a way, the alpha to the omega, and that within it there could be a huge layer of other dimensions that are still also involved in this unfolding process. And something about that, I think, is getting closer to a sense of what the truth is for me.
Let's go to Tim in Culver City, California now, west of the Rockies. Timothy, welcome to the program.
Hi, George. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Hi, Tim.
What an honor to talk to both of you, Linda. You've heard this so many times tonight. You're one of my favorite guests, too. And
thank you.
Gosh, I really admire your work. What a nice career, both of you, you know?
Thank you.
And I wanted to say that I saw a spectacular UFO myself, and I was glad I wasn't by myself when I saw it in the mid-80s, but it wasn't the first, or early 80s, but it wasn't the first one that I saw, which we were in third grade. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, right at the north end of the valley, San Fernando, Silmar, you know, so in the 60s, we always heard those big sonic booms, you know, in the earlier days, but coming in from the water fountain at recess, like kids do in third grade, somebody said, look up in the air. And it was a bright day, and there were three egg-shaped discs, very high, like a jet, flying, you know, triangular formation.
Were they eggs? Egg-shaped?
Yeah.
Okay.
They were silver.
The egg-shaped is definitely associated with what are called the Eben gray types. There's people I've talked to in the military who have said, when they are around and they land, those are the white egg-looking, they're not the flat disks, and they're not cylinders, and they're not spheres, and they're not triangles. They look like eggs, and that they have some kind of a landing device that has been laughably compared to erector sets of eggs. And
right.
I have illustrations of those from a variety of people. And so it sounds to me, and one other point that you just said, that they always travel in threes. Two are offensive, defensive, if the other one is landing.
Sounds like the Lonnie Zamora case in Socorro, New Mexico,
late
police officer.
Absolutely. That's what I understand, and that when that mistake, the latitude, longitude, and the time were off, and they got it back together the next morning at 6 a.m. over on White Sands, and there was the meeting, and that the three egg-shaped craft, two stayed up hovering above, offensive, defensive. The one landed, and out of it came beings to meet with humans to go to a building for the exchange of bodies and technology.
Next up, we go to Brandon in Dover, Delaware. Hey, Brandon, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
How you doing, George?
Good, Brandon.
How you doing, Linda?
Thank you.
Been listening since I was a teenager in the 90s. Reason why I'm calling is because I had a question for you, Linda, and maybe you can answer it too, George.
Sure.
I was the person who screens before we get on here. I was telling them that we hear of aliens, of an Asian look to them. Some aliens,
Filipino
extraterrestrials, have a yes, and some of them have a Nordic look.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we never hear of any that have an Africoid look?
The black skin ones. There are drawings and illustrations going back into the, as far as my work is concerned, back into the 70s, where people in the human abduction syndrome have also encountered very, very dark-skinned, black-skinned beings, if that's what you're asking.
There have been reports of how many different species, Linda?
Well, the Reagan report, which is the strongest that I know, is 5. Then back in the early 80s, there were rumors going around that MJ-12 was was trying to deal with 9. You heard a lot about 9 types. But when you come to, excuse me, when you come to where, if you took all of the human abduction reports and you boiled them all down and everything there is, it seems like there are 3 main categories. There are the talls that can have blonde hair, red hair, black hair, brown hair, gold eyes, blue eyes, gray eyes, and so forth. But they're tall. They're tall and thin. Then there is the category of the extraterrestrial biological entities, which by definition, from everything I know and the illustrations, do not have large black slanted eyes. That is in a different category. One of the clone beings serves a completely different function, that the Evens themselves have eyes that are more walnut-shaped, maybe even a brownish color with some black in them. So if the Evens are top dog in that category, and they use cloning and hybridization for making anything that they need, they extend their civilization through cloning and hybridization. To use the term extraterrestrial biological entity or Even for them, you're encompassing the technology of genetic manipulation. I hope I'm making this clear, that one civilization could be using hybridization and cloning so much that they, George, alone could be responsible, let's say, for 100 different types, but they are all entangled and related to the one prime intelligence. Does that make sense?
Well, it does to me.
Okay, so the third major category, saying that the Evens, the grays, all of them, there's many different versions. The third big category is the standing up lizards or alligators. And when people draw them from conscious, a rancher who came across a standing up alligator because the horse reared back, she nearly fell off the horse, didn't know what was wrong, and there standing was this 6 or 7 foot tall alligator. Everybody recoils from this concept.
Yeah, that's like the devil. The devil looked like that.
Well, but let's,
Satan.
But let's go back to the Garden of Eden.
Uh-huh, there you go.
What was the teacher to Adam and Eve? It was a quote-unquote serpent.
Yep.
All right, now, it could be, I don't know for a fact, but it could be that there is a civilization of reptilians, meaning that there are these lineages throughout the cosmos that end up in these various forms that we know on Earth, but there's probably a lot more. But let's just say that reptile is a form in the universe, and that one of these third big group is the standing up lizard or alligator, and it is possible that the Garden of Eden story, that they actually may have started out trying to help humans, but something has gone awry behind that matrix. I'm telling you that this is the complexity. I'm not saying that what has gone awry behind the matrix is necessarily lethal or evil. I'm not using those words, but something is wrong. And it may be that the stories that were circulating so much in the 90s, that we are dealing with technologies from, let's say, Michio Kaku's Civilization 3 that has been doing going back in time and going forward in time, and they've created a problem, and that we're in a solar system that is caught in a time loop, and that nobody yet has been able to get it out of a time loop of cycles of destruction. That would mean that we are on a planet in a system that may always be going through some kind of cyclic problem until something is worked out in time. And I think as we go forward from beyond 2015, my personal opinion is the whole issue of time travel, and space-time relationship to the large cosmos is what we're going to be hearing more and more about, that time travelers and time systems are part of the big issue behind the Matrix.
I'll see you in about a month, Linda, at Contact in the Desert. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.